Day Zero update for November 25th, 2018. I'm Filippo D'Onofrio.
I'm Patrick Mifflin.
I'm Brian Perkins.
And I'm Dan Repetorio.
And yeah, we had a holiday week over there in the U.S., so as you can probably imagine, news was sort of slow.
Yeah. Also, just to mention, yes, we know it's another regular show. we swear we're going to get to the RDR show eventually. It's just that, you know, time and circumstances conspire against us. So
Well, it'll work out better in the end, I think, when everybody has had more time to play the game. So make for better discussion. But yeah, so it's not the RDR show again, but it's a regular show and it's a slow week. So we got just a bunch of random junk to
discussion topics.
Yeah. So it's going to be a pretty chill week, I think. It's we don't know. We usually do these every now and then, and getting close to the holidays, we'll probably do them a bit more. We're going to have our year-end recap, too, that we got to end up doing.
They do make for good shows.
Yeah, it's just fun when we get to just sit down and just talk about random crap.
Yeah.
So we've been playing some stuff this week, I'm guessing. For me, it's the Tetris Effect. Yeah, still playing that. Finished Journey Mode. It was glorious. I love every minute of it. I need to. Now I'm going through that journey mode again on normal because I did it on beginner. Now I'm doing it on normal. And hopefully I'll be able to finish that one too because, I don't know, it's just fun. What else could I say about Tetris Effect? You should buy it. It's great.
Yes, you should.
Yeah. That's basically been my gaming for the past week and a half. Well, ever since it came out, and I did the review of that. It's up on smashpad.com if you can read it. Well, you can read it. It's there if you want to. So that's kind of been it for me. What about you, Pat?
I'm going to call it the same, Tetris Effect. I've been all over the place just because I've been continuing to hack the bejesus out of my PS3. And so I've been playing a little bit of everything, but Tetris Effect does stand out because I was playing it the entire time we were recording Let's Weekend last night, and thereby ended up being one of the top 100 contributors to the ritual, which I wasn't even trying to do.
Yeah.
But you just get into that whole Tetris mode, and you forget what you're doing. Yeah. So...
Yeah, you were also telling me that your PS3s are multiplying, apparently.
Something like that. I found an extra fat PS3 in my boxes that, you know, from when I moved in. So yeah. That is a thing that happened.
That you didn't even know you owned.
I'm trying to figure out how it ended up there, and I'm coming to a few conclusions, but I'm going to have to ask around a little bit. We'll see.
Yeah.
So does your pad still work?
The one that I know is mine doesn't. That one definitely needs some repairs. This one, the jury's still out. But if it is the one that I'm thinking that it is, then it probably doesn't work.
Gotcha.
But... it would just be a drive problem in that case. So we'll see.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know very many that are still alive, so if it works, good on you, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it would solve a lot of my backward compatibility issues.
Yeah.
More than they've already been solved. I really just do not like the way Ridge Racer 5 runs on the PS3 Slim.
Yeah. The software emulator is not perfect, but...
But, yeah, Tetris Effect has been the defining title of my week, I would have to say.
All right. So how about you, Brandon?
Well, pretty much Spyro. I have finished the main storylines for the first two games, so I'm now in the midst of Year of the Dragon, which I think is probably my favorite of the three games so far, although I still have a lot of love for the original, because that was the one Spyro game I actually played back in the day. But, you know, the third game actually has it has a variety of playstyles, because it's not just Spyro that you're playing. playing as. You also have four other characters that you can play, and all of them have different styles of playing. One of them is just is a kangaroo who can, you know, jump around and kick stuff. Another is a penguin who can fly and also has a heat-seeking missile launcher on its back. Because why not?
Because video games.
Yeah, it's a penguin, by the way. I don't know if I mentioned that. And then there is another character, I think a turtle or something, who essentially their game style is a third-person shooter. Until, like, that one section towards the end where it then becomes a first-person shooter. Hmm. And then Sparks, you know, Sparks, the dragonfly that flies around Spyro. Yeah, eventually he gets his own gaming segments, and his is basically basically like a twin stick shooter.
Nice.
So yeah, just all the things in one game, and it's a lot of fun. And obviously, you know, Douglas Coupland's soundtrack is just amazing, both in the original form and in the sort of enhanced environmental form that they gave it for these newer editions of the games. You guys know who Douglas Coupland is originally with, right?
No.
He was the drummer for the Police.
Oh.
Mm.
Yep.
Wouldn't have expected him making video game music, but okay.
Well, I mean, this was the mid-90s. Yeah. You know?
Everybody was doing it.
Yeah. It's just, I believe the reason why this trilogy, they've put it out now, is I think the same reason they came out with the Crash trilogy recently. I think Toys for Bob is planning on bringing the Spyro license back for a new set of games, because I think the whole Skylanders Toys to Life market is fast drying up.
Wash it off, maybe do last so, it.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's pretty much what I've been doing. I have, like, sporadically also been playing RDR2, but mostly it's been Spyro, and let's be honest, it's not very easy to go from the, you know, beautiful Pixar-ish cartoon world of Spyro to the dreary, gritty, revisionist Western world of RDR2, so.
Yeah,
so,
two very different styles.
Yeah. So, Dan Reb, what about you?
Well, I actually wanted to ask you, I also have Spyro 2, but I haven't popped it in yet, because plenty of other games to play. One of the reasons why I bought it was because, one, I'm a platformer enthusiast, and two, Spyro is a franchise I never actually got a chance with. So I just wanted to ask you what actually makes the series stand out compared to other 3D platformers.
Well, a handful of reasons. The first is Spyro himself. Spyro, his control scheme and his overall play style is dramatically different from a lot of other 3D platformers. I think it partly has to do with the fact that because he walks on all fours instead of two, it means that, you know, he controls more like a, I don't want to say more like a car, but his overall animations and moveset, it just stands out. Also, he is, unlike a lot of 2D platformers, he can actually glide on command, so there's a lot of flying involved. And of course, he's got his fire breathing move, which is just cool. Also, I think it's partly just the visual aspect of it, which, I mean, the originals, obviously they haven't aged quite as well as they did back in the day, but I mean, that was early days of the PlayStation. But and also just Douglas Coupland's soundtrack. It's just legitimately really good.
Is it more action based or is it more platform based? You'd say
it's really more action based. There is platforming, but the majority of the platforming isn't really like hopping over gaps or anything like Mario. Mm-hmm. It's more getting to high ground so that you can glide down to another section of the map. Like there are definitely like more platformy elements in the game, but they're actually rare considered the actual gliding aspect.
Okay, cool.
Also, I will go ahead and tell you already, these games are a lot of fun, but they're also, the first one especially is kind of short. And that's partly due to the fact that, you know, this was back originally back in the early days of the PlayStation. So, you know, 3D games in and of themselves were kind of a novelty. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, they're all definitely worth playing.
No, I don't mind the short length at all. That's no. Fantastic, actually.
Well, I mean, you know, also, you know, there's you get, like, extra goodies for, like, 100%ing the games. So, nice. There's also that.
Cool.
All right. Sounds good. So, anyway, I actually just got back from another vacation about a week ago. I was in New York for the first time, so that was
pretty
cool.
How did that treat you?
It was nice. Did some sightseeing, did a lot of eating, a lot of ramen, a lot of different kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
Rockefeller Center is also home to the only Nintendo store in the United States.
Yep.
So, as you can imagine, I spent about, you know, 3 gleeful hours in there. It was also cool.
And how much money?
$250. Yeah, but actually, most of that was actually not on myself. It was actually just for gifts, because I have a lot of Nintendo fans in the family. So
getting that Christmas shopping done early.
Especially since, like, a lot of the stuff there you can only get in that store. But, yeah, I mean, like, for the listeners that don't really know about it, it's a 2-story flagship store in the heart of New York City. And the first floor is primarily Mario stuff and exclusive store stuff, while the top is both a museum and just a combination of, like, other parts of their franchises. So you have a Zelda corner, you have a big Pokemon corner. This store actually used to be the Pokemon Center, but it was revamped into Nintendo NY because, you know, I'm not saying Pokemon got smaller, but Nintendo definitely got bigger. So
yeah.
That.
Were they selling the Hanafuda cards there?
They were.
I thought so.
They weren't.
Yeah, so those who don't.
They were just a typical Mario.
Yeah, it was the stuff with the Mario characters on it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, for those of you who don't know, Nintendo, of course, is like over 100 years old, and they started out manufacturing Hanafuda cards. It's like one of the handful of historical products that they still produce.
Mm-hmm. And I actually took a whole bunch of photos. They're on my Facebook, but I actually just might write a little small feature on the site to just, like, show off what stuff they have. Some of the coolest stuff they have are upstairs. They have pretty much a shrine to Amiibo, which has, like, every Amiibo in it. And yeah, that was just jaw dropping. And they also have a old Game Boy from the Gulf War that was salvaged, and they say it still works. I mean, it's not on. I can't really prove that, but that was also pretty interesting. But yeah, a lot of cool stuff. It also coincided with the release of Pokemon Let's Go. So I didn't grab a copy there. I actually grabbed one at GameStop because I needed something to play during my flight home. And yeah, the game, for lack of a better term, is better than it has any business being. In fact, it's actually great.
Isn't it basically just, aren't they basically just remakes of Pokemon Red and Blue?
Yeah, it's more closely Pokemon Yellow, mainly because Team Rocket has Jesse and James in it. You have your Eevee or your Pikachu following you. And basically, it's this, whereas the original games had you playing as Red and your rival was Blue, you're actually a third trainer, and then your rival is a fourth trainer. So I'm assuming that, you know, Bulbasaur, Charmander, and Squirtle were still a main thing. They could actually be obtained in the game as gifts. But yeah, you actually come across, it's a little bit of a spoiler, but, you know, spoiling Pokemon shouldn't be that big of a deal.
Yeah.
Blue is in the game, so I'm assuming Red will be in there somewhere. Actually, one of my favorite parts of Silver and Gold was the fact that you actually find Red in the post-game, so I don't know what to expect this time. I'm about 5 badges in, and the most impressive feats about this game are the quality of life changes. There are no more random battles, so you can actually see the Pokemon that are in the grass, and sometimes they'll have a surrounding aura on them, and when you actually approach them, they'll either be a tiny Pokemon or a bigger version of that Pokemon. And when you catch some of the Pokemon, some of the same Pokemon consecutively, you get what's called a catch combo, which will give you better EV stats as you continue to catch them, or you might even run into a shiny faster. So, you know, instead of spending like 6 to 8 hours trying to find the perfect Pokemon, it can be done in a whole lot less time. And the time thing is actually pretty cool because you know, in the original game, it would take you maybe an hour to get through Mount Moon, which is the first real dungeon in the game, whereas in Pokemon Let's Go, it'll take you maybe about, like, 5 to 10 minutes, mainly because, you know, you can avoid certain Pokemon, you can just go to where go from point A to point B rather easily. Like, all of the maps and dungeon designs are the same, so if you have that muscle memory, it's all there, and the quality of life changes are just excellent. Another cool thing is before, when you caught more than 6 Pokemon, they end up being transferred to a PC, and the only way you can access them would be to go to a Pokemon Center and go to the PC. Now you can actually do all that through the UI. So another time saver there. And all these things, like, and it makes you wonder what they'll do with the eventual real release they'll have next year. But so far, a lot of veterans have been, like, panning this, mainly because they were saying it's a more babied version of what's essentially baby's first RPG. But again, the quality of life changes really improve this year, and I don't see myself not putting it in my top 10. It's really that good. So,
See, if it had been based on real Pokemon instead of Pogo, I probably would have been all over it.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm still holding out for that RPG that's supposed to be coming next year.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The main thing I also have to say about that is, when you're catching Pokemon or when you're running into a wild Pokemon, you have to use the Go mechanics to actually catch them. I do have the Pokeball attachment, but I haven't actually used it yet. I have held it, and it's there is some weight to it when there's a Pokemon in there, which is actually pretty interesting.
Wait, when there's a Pokemon in there, it's weight variable? How did they pull
it? Yeah, I don't know about the weight, but when you shake it, it definitely does feel like there's something in there. So,
okay, that's weird.
Yeah, because it's kind of like, I don't know if you remember the Pokemon Pikachu Gigapet thing they had back in the day.
Well, I remember it. I'd never used one or seen one.
Yeah,
but
it's the same sort of thing, except there's no screen on it. So, I mean, it's essentially a pedometer, and you can, like, I guess you can gain experience as you're walking with one in it. But the other thing is that, yeah, it can also be used as a controller, and to make people actually get one, it comes with Mew. So, yeah, that'll have Pokemon X all over it. But in regards to what you just said about most of the mechanics being Go-based, there are enough trainers to actually make that an afterthought, at least for me. The turn-based style is still very
so,
much...
So the combat is taken from the real games?
Yeah. All of the combat is taken from the real games, with the only difference being... With the only difference being you don't actually fight wild Pokemon, but the trainers, they're all still there, and there's plenty of them. So... Yeah,
so it's more of a hybrid.
Yeah, pretty much. And then when you catch a Pokemon, you actually get experience for your entire party. And same goes for battles. Like when you fight and win, your entire party gains experience, not just one. That for me is actually a double edged sword. Like, it's cool to be able to train all your Pokemon at the same time, but especially early on in the game, you don't even know if that's the full party you want. Yeah. And it sucks that you can't really focus on one entirely, but again, it does help because, you know, training all 6 at the same time is rather time consuming. So
yeah.
But what you were saying about it being a hybrid, that's exactly what it is.
So I don't have to worry about the shitty Pogo battle mechanics.
Not at all, because that's only when you're catching.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
There might be something going on there.
Yeah. It's pretty off. But again, yeah, it had no business being this good. But I mean, as someone who's been playing Pokemon since day one, like, I'm fully impressed.
Cool. So.
But yeah, that's largely been it. For the most part, I've just been scouring Black Friday deals, which I have to say this year is particularly more aggressive. As a former Gamers Club Unlocked person, like, you know, I hate the fact that the deals don't stack and things like that, but from what I'm seeing across all stores, suffice to say, it's surprising. I think GameStop won as far as their deals go. Like, I was able to get God of War for $17, Assassin's Creed Odyssey for $27. Like, both of these are bona fide Game of the Year candidates, and the fact that I didn't even spend anywhere close to $60 in order to get these two is rather impressive. And then for the Switch, I've had games like Celeste, Dead Cells, and The Messenger on my radar for a while, but I haven't picked them up because I haven't found a deal since they're all digital. They all went on sale on the same day. So, wow.
There you go. Yeah, I pretty much went broke just on the PSN Black Friday sale.
Oh, what'd you get?
I got Final Fantasy 15, Persona 5. What else?
Persona 5 was like $20, right? Something like
yeah.
That. Oh my god.
Yeah, well, it has otherwise held its value, which is what's kept me from getting it up to this point, just because money's been tight.
Yeah.
I got Shining Resonance Refrain and one other game.
Oh, yeah, I also got Valkyria Chronicles 4. For
that's the one. That's the fourth game I picked up.
Yeah. Yep.
So I basically just went absolutely squirrel nuts on JRPGs.
Yeah, enjoy it because, damn, that game is good.
Yeah, I've never played one, so I'm really excited about this.
Well, I've still got to install 1, 2, and 3 on my PS3, so I'm going to do the whole thing in order.
Yeah. Okay.
So, yeah, that's it for me.
Pretty much it. All right. So let's get into a couple of news bits before we get into the discussion topics of the day. Another character reveal for DOA 6. A couple of them, not too surprising. Kokoro and Lanariposa are joining the roster, or
yeah.
I should say, coming back.
Status quo.
And it's still still proving that once again the stories of the disappearing fan service have been greatly exaggerated.
Yeah, they're dialing it down, but it's still there.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
It's basically what.
And like we said, they're. And they're all going to get their classic costumes anyway, so...
Yeah. Yeah. And also a newcomer who basically is doing a Pikachu impression at this point.
Yep.
She's kind of electric.
Yeah.
So...
She has electric carrying gloves. That's what her thing is. Apparently she's like a mad...
The DOA Universe's version of Crimson Viper.
Yeah.
Yep, she's a mad scientist.
Yeah.
Hopefully easier to play, though.
Yeah.
So, does this fill out the roster completely, or do we still...
No, there's still a lot of time. Well, there's still about 2 months, maybe not quite that long before launch. I think they've got some more surprises left in them. We know that Nyotengu is coming as DLC.
Oh, God, I cannot... Oh, God, the breast physics they're going to put on Nyotengu.
Just no.
Look, let me put it this way. DOA is known for having women characters that are gifted, to say the least. Nyotengu is the one character that puts the rest of them to shame.
Yeah.
Although that might
like,
not
she
be
is legitimately
now.
So large, you are wondering how she doesn't fall over.
Hmm. Yeah.
Well, supernatural beings like demons tend to get away with that.
Yeah.
Yeah. True. Also, something I recently learned, DOA, Dead or Alive, the franchise has a small but not unsubstantial lesbian fan community.
Shocking.
Yeah.
Today I learned. All right. Solid roster so far. We will see more. I'm guessing probably going to see one every couple of weeks or so from now until launch time.
Something like that.
There's
probably going to be all DLC moving forward, though.
Yeah.
But I'm okay with that. If this is the launch roster, then they're launching with a really solid roster.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, everybody you would expect to be there is there.
The version that I played at Evo had maybe 6 or 8 characters, and it was fantastic. So I can't wait to get a hold of a 25 to 30 character version.
Yeah, was Ein announced?
Not yet. Yeah. Now that I think about it, they seem to be going hard in the other direction, where DOA 5 was all about crossovers and guest characters. They aren't even using guest characters from Ninja Gaiden besides Ryu himself.
Yeah. Good. Yeah. I mean, Ryu, he's kind of...
No Momiji.
Yeah. I mean, Ryu would have to be there because he's been there since the beginning.
He's one of the original DOA characters, so...
Yeah. You can't really not have him.
Yeah.
So good stuff there, and we'll continue to follow it.
And again, I feel the need to stress, I was at Evo this year.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
I got my hands on Soul Calibur 5 and Dead or Soul Calibur 6 and Dead or Alive 6 early.
Mm-hmm.
DOA 6 was the one I kept coming back to.
Yeah,
I just feel the need to reiterate that here. So, I mean, Soul Calibur 6 is out now. It's great. But DOA 6 was the one... playing that game was just such a treat. It really felt like they completed the idea of the series. And it doesn't feel so damn floaty. As past installments did.
So, cool. So we got some sad news to report. Maybe? I don't know. Is it sad? Because Prima Games is closing their doors.
Usually their books have been top of the line. They were the... they were one of the original unofficial strategy guide publishers out there. But their whole thing was that they ran circles around the official stuff. And they got around being unofficial by putting the label at the top of the the top of the cover, Prima Games Official Strategy Guide. Which means it was their official, theirs officially, not the publishers.
They also tended to do a lot of behind the scenes type stuff as well, and basically like, leaving no stone unturned. So
yeah, if you wanted a lot of trivia to go with your knowledge of the actual game, Prima Games was a really good place to turn.
Of course, the problem is that the internet happened.
So the internet kind of made all of this completely unnecessary.
Yeah, because now basically on launch day, you got like people doing streams, you got IGN doing their wikis, there's all kinds of stuff showing up like right away. So
I would say IGN wikis are a non-factor because no one ever adds to them, and I've seen.
It's usually
they put them there, and then no one.
As far
uses
as the internet goes, like I think it's a. It's a yes and no thing. I mean, like, what was the most impressive thing about the Prima Games strategy guides was the fact that most of the time they were available day and date as the game came out. I'm like, fuck, how early did they actually get access to the game? Whereas you look at the IGN wiki guides, I mean, like, no disrespect to them, but there's a reason why most of their contractors are just there to write guides. It's just not fun.
Yeah, and I mean, Prima, they're not official publishers guides, but they kind of were, because you know, they did get behind the scenes. They did have access to the games early,
and they usually had better information than the official guides.
And most of the time, the official guides actually just stopped being a thing. You don't see too many of them from publishers nowadays.
And I think Versus Games is the last one still going.
One thing I really loved about the Prima guides though was the artwork in there.
In a lot of cases, you just got that full-page version of the box art as the cover. And in a lot of cases, that was what you wanted. Now, it's almost like having a poster that that was never made available.
So, even if you're, like, not interested in game strategy guides, like, go to eBay and, like, maybe pick up one or two of these. Just to see what kind of work they put into it, because oftentimes they were really, really good. I mean, they did have a couple of stinkers now and then, but for the most part, they were actually really solid.
They were interesting when it came to fighting games because they knew when they were speaking, when they would be speaking outside of their expertise. And so if they couldn't give you a lot of detail as far as how a character or matchup should be played, they would just give you what they felt were the best tools to build a foundation of your own with that character and then let you move forward with that, which is really the right idea. Just, you know, here are 10 moves that that are among the best that the character has that you can build around. Start here. And, you know, even without going into a ton of detail, you know, they weren't giving bad advice. They were just acknowledging that, you know, these weren't Evo competitors that were writing their shit. They were all over working for Versus Games. But they still gave you useful information all the same. And they found a way to make it more than just a glorified move list.
They usually, especially if it was like Mortal Kombat or something, because like, let's face it, the reason you bought those strategy guides for comment was so you could get all the list of the finishing moves, and they usually had some funny description or quip to go along with it. So,
yeah. Yeah, these are the kind of things that, you know, I would typically buy with RPGs.
Yep.
You know, and because,
you know, as it so happens, those just happen to be their best guides.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, because it's nice having everything there in a form that you can just look at. You don't have to connect, you know. Mm-hmm. Offline material is actually advantageous at some times.
Now, here's something I want to ask you. Were these game guides, obviously you used them for the games, but was there anybody out there besides me that would just read them just for their own sake?
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It was like a Prima guide, but if anybody remembers the Nintendo Official Player's Guide for Ocarina of Time, that was actually written like a story. Like, it never actually told you what to do. It would tell you what Link does. And it was just an interesting way to go about things.
Yeah. Well, see, I remember they did that for the first two Myst games.
Yeah.
Because, like, both of them would basically have a journal of a person going through the Myst universe. And it was a legitimately great way to go about it. So.
Yep. So, well, they'll be missed.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and their books the just generally made books. A good companion for whatever game you happen to be buying.
Yep.
Yep.
Well, you were saying that, Dan Rip?
The hardbound ones are actually worth something if you actually find a few of those. So
yeah,
saying.
Good luck.
Well, which ones?
I don't remember, but I think there's definitely some Final Fantasy ones that were hardbound that I remember.
Yeah, I think there's a hardbound one for Final Fantasy X.
Yeah,
I remember. Is pretty sought after now.
Mm-hmm.
And also the ones that they've made for like every version of Pokemon are rather expansive.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
A lot of material to cover.
Yep.
So,
I mean, when it comes to the length, Prima Strategy Guides had nothing on the ones you could get in Japan.
Yeah.
The ones you get in Japan are legitimately like
homes.
They're like double the size of a phone book.
Yeah.
But, well, you paid for them.
Oh, yeah.
You paid.
Okay, so next bit here. Capcom Unity sat down with Akira Nishitani and his old Street Fighter II dev team. They had a bit of an interview, and were there any really good nuggets of info in there, Pat?
There were some parts where Akiman forgot some of the orders that he handed out to other members of the team, which was kind of amusing. one of the background artists said, "Yeah, I put this little quirk in here because you explicitly told me to." I what?
Whoops. Is that why there's a pilot in Guile's stage looking like he's beaten off?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But it's a good read. Just good stories continue to come out about the development of that game, and this is another one.
Hmm.
So,
yeah.
If you looked at the design documents that were made available in 30th anniversary, and you want some more information to go along with that, then this is a fantastic companion for that.
Yeah. So yeah, it's a pretty substantial piece. So I recommend setting aside some time to read this.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so we will move on.
And apparently, they made it sound like they got more.
Yeah,
like that was just part one or something.
There might be a second. Yep. All right, so let's move on to Sony. We've touched on this the past couple of weeks about Sony not being at E3 or PSX. Well, because that's
no PSX
not
this year.
Yeah.
I don't know about any more, but they're skipping a year, and that's a weird thing to do.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so we should kind of talk about the implications of that. What's that going to mean going forward?
Well, first of all, it means that we stand a chance of not seeing them at a trade show until next year's Gamescom. Just for perspective on that. I am saying mark it down, PlayStation 5 Holiday 2020.
Mm. Ooh, boy.
You cannot miss E3 on a launch year.
No.
You cannot sit out E3 if you're going to be launching that holiday.
God, but so, are we ready this soon to already be going to another generation?
Oh, yeah, we are.
I don't think we are right now, but I think in 2020 we will be.
Yeah.
That's true.
And, that timing actually coincides pretty well because they could, for instance, use PSX 2019 as the launching pad for PS5. So yeah, they could make the launch announcement there and launch the system holiday 2020. That would be. But what happens to the PS4 SKUs at this point? Does the Slim go away, or does the Pro just become, you know, the Slim now?
I think you let the market decide that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
If one of the two, if you see their sales start to flag, go all in on the other model.
Yeah.
And then make another PSVR bundle.
Yeah. Now, those PSVR bundles are doing very well, I must point out.
Yeah.
Yep.
Wasn't the Switch unveiled in October? And they released in March?
Yeah, they unveiled it in September, October, and then released in March.
Yeah, they didn't need E3 at all.
No.
Yeah, but that's Nintendo. Nintendo got a Nintendo.
Yeah.
Yeah, so...
And Nintendo had a contentious relationship with E3 already at that point.
Yeah.
So, I think this is Sony. I think what's going to happen is they're going to make the announcement at TGS 2019. I think we're going to see what the console looks like. We're going to get a B-roll of some games in development. And then we're probably not going to hear anything regarding the new platform until E3.
Yeah, of 2020.
I don't think, 2020, because they're sitting out 2019. I don't think they're going to do PSX next year if... unless they have some here and now PS4 software to push.
Yeah.
But E3 is going to be the real media blitz, and the launch date, the price point, so on and so forth. That's going to be your full disclosure.
Yeah.
But I think TGS is where we're going to first meet the PS5.
Yeah. And I mean, the timing makes a whole lot of sense if you look at the Black Friday sales for this year. They were basically blowing Slims out the door. You know, the Spider-Man bundles for 200 bucks, that's like a killer deal. Considering you get like one of the best games of the year. So, the writing's on the wall here that we're right at the point of a generation transition. So,
yeah.
Well, didn't they already straight up say they were going into the final stage of the PS4's lifespan?
Yeah, they kind of did, but...
I mean, it was that one putz that we can't stand, but I'm pretty sure that that we've had official word from Sony that that's how they're looking at it.
Yeah.
So I think they're sitting out E3, they're sitting out PSX, they're just going to let this last wave of software push out the door, and then probably... we're going to be hearing some things about the last of the headlining PS4 games, probably right around E3 2020, and we'll start to see a smooth transition from there.
Yeah, because I mean, what does Sony have left in the pipeline? They've got Days Gone, that's coming out 2019. They've got Ghost of Tsushima, which is still doesn't have quite a release date yet.
There's Last of Us Part 2.
Yeah, there's that on the PS4 as well. They got their annual MLB The Show, so that's pretty.
Don't forget about Anthem, for example. That's still coming out next year, and Kingdom Hearts.
Yeah, that's third party also. Yeah. I'm more referring to like Sony first party stuff. So
I gotcha.
That's your ending.
Was that in the... Death Stranding? Yeah, that's technically a Sony first party.
Okay, I do have to ask. Final Fantasy VII Remake, what are the odds that it still makes the PS4?
Extremely low at this point.
Yeah.
Be up to square.
Yeah, it's going to be up to square. I mean, Nomura is not involved with it anymore, so it might actually make a release date at this point. Who knows? Yeah. It's for me, the one that's up in the air is Ghost of Tsushima. So they were showing that on a PS4 Pro, and there were sections of that game that were struggling. So
I just don't see that game delaying, though. I think it's going to just hard charge to a 2019 release.
Well, I hope so.
It was chugging, but it was also an early build.
Yeah,
true. No, we'll see. All I know is it looks fantastic.
Yeah.
And feudal Japanese games. Yeah, we should have more of those.
Yes. Like, I watch my friends streaming Red Dead 2, and I'm like, if there was a samurai version of this, yeah, I'd be all over it.
Yep.
So. I mean, that remaining first-party lineup is still more than what Microsoft does, so...
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, Microsoft, for some reason, decided...
in a state of terraforming.
Yeah, because, I mean, they decided that they were going to jettison all their first-party studios for reasons nobody understands. So, yeah, now they're rebuilding, basically. Huh? I mean, they got 343, which is handling Halo. They technically still have what's left of Lionhead.
Left of Lionhead?
Not much. So, what else is there? Well, they have Rare, sort of.
Mm-hmm.
They're doing Sea of Thieves and probably wish they weren't. So,
Jesus.
Yeah.
Oh.
So,
you know.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing that makes me think Sony won't show off the PS5 at TGS is the fact that while they're still very much a Japanese company, a lot of their IPs are primarily Western-based. And I don't know if a game like Uncharted
The first step to solving a problem is admitting there is one. Putting that out there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Of course, there's nothing that doesn't suggest that, you know, they'll go ahead and let the third parties go ahead and take over whatever game announcements they want to show off. Like Final Fantasy VII.
But I feel like at this point...
Nomura has said that they are going to start showing more Final Fantasy VII Remake as soon as they're on the other side of the Kingdom Hearts 3 launch.
Yeah.
Yeah, but remember, that is Nomura.
Yeah, but they've also confirmed that Kingdom Hearts 3 is actually done now.
Yeah. As I was saying, and this is Nomura we're talking about. So,
well, I'm pretty sure if he spoke out of turn on Final Fantasy VII Remake that Yosuke Matsuda would kick his nuts up his throat.
Probably. So.
But that man probably barely tolerates Nomura at this point.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So... Yeah, it's fun to speculate on this kind of stuff because it's like anything can happen. I mean, for all we know, Sony has like 3, 4, 5 big Japanese titles in the works at this very moment for PS5, and they're just waiting for the launch announcement.
Yeah.
And
honestly, they need that. I don't think what's in the pipeline right now is enough to fill the gap until holiday 2020.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, we know PS5 is substantially more capable than the PS4. And it's like, it is a generational shift because they're actually putting CPUs in there that actually have performance, which is a nice thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So,
you've been hearing rumblings of the two magic words, backward compatibility.
Yeah.
Well, at this point, if the PS5 doesn't have backwards compatibility for PS4, you're doing it wrong.
Yeah.
Because they're both, you know, x86 based. So if the PS5 couldn't run PS4 software, I would have to fly to Tokyo and slap somebody.
Yeah.
So
considering
run PS1, PS2, PS3 without blinking an eye.
Yeah. Also considering the fact that, you know, the PS4, you know, the way with Sony consoles is that as they near the end of their life cycle, the end of that life cycle tends to extend a little bit. So, you know, they would be kind of screwing over a part of the market if the PS5 wasn't backwards compatible.
Yeah. So,
but this is also Sony we're talking about. So
there are going to be a lot of PS4s under Christmas trees this year and next.
Yeah.
Yep.
You got to protect those. You got to protect those consumers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm just saying, if you're buying a PS4 right now, you're not going to be disappointed in 2020.
No.
You're
no.
still going to have plenty of good stuff to play.
Oh, yes. Uh-huh.
So, yeah. So let's move on to talking about PC Classic and what the games that we want to see in there.
You know, I feel like I failed you guys. My goal was to come here on this show and be ready with a 30-game lineup ready to go. Just like I have been for past Classic Edition consoles. I haven't done that yet. I'm not a dyed-in-the-wool PC gamer. But I'm not either,
to be honest.
But I have been able to come up with a partial list that could serve as at least a set of goals.
There. I have three.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, why don't we do that? We'll go. We each have our picks, and by the end, we'll probably have a pretty good lineup.
So. All right, I have three, and you can go ahead and judge if they're serious: Solitaire, Minesweeper, and Space Cadet Pinball. And
well, I mean,
I want to laugh, but I honestly,
if they were to have Microsoft's blessing, then that would be a good place to start.
Yeah, if they can make that work, and they just need to get Windows 95 running, and they got that pretty much handled.
Yeah,
but as far as the DOS-based stuff, I have a few picks if you want to hear them, or if you want to do yours first, Pat.
Go ahead.
All right, so first and foremost, Jazz Jack Rabbit 2.
Got that.
Okay. Early Epic game. Very good stuff.
I don't hate it.
Yeah.
Actually, why not just the whole trilogy?
Yeah. Well, that third one wasn't very good.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. So, the first two, at least. I would like to have, what else here? Tyrion 2000, because I like vertical scrolling shoot 'em ups, and that was probably one of the best that was available for DOS.
Mm-hmm.
So there was that one. There was a horizontal scrolling shooter that I really, really loved, and nobody apparently played. It was called Star Gunner. It was, came out early 90s. It was an Apogee game.
Apogee alone could probably
fill the entire thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was very reminiscent of kind of a cross between Forgotten Worlds, Gradius, and R-Type.
Oh.
So, yeah, you wonder why.
Take my money.
Yeah. I have a CD of that. So, yeah, good stuff. My fourth pick would be, no, third pick, because I can count, would be Duke Nukem 3D. Yeah, kind of, it was, next to Doom, it was kind of one of the most, one of the more influential type first-person shooters.
Also, they pretty much put it on everything.
Yeah. So,
it might be a little bit fringe in terms of what era we're going into on this, but as a pick, I think it's a really good one.
Yeah. That, and finally, a little bit of an obscure one, but I would go with Screamer. Which is a very underrated but excellent arcade racer.
Okay. Yeah. It's off the board, but we definitely, my list, it was definitely geared towards showing how diverse PC gaming could have even been back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have a lot of picks. I just don't have 30 of them.
Mm-hmm.
And I did consolidate some of them into, like, if a game had a direct sequel under the same installment or expansions, things like that. I counted those as one game.
Okay.
So I've got a lot of them here, though. And these aren't games that maybe I would have gone with personally if I were handpicking my favorites. But if you're putting together a PC Classic Edition and you want to give a good sample size of what PC gaming was like back in the day,
right?
Then these are games that I would have gone with. So alphabetical order. Civilization 2.
All right. Yeah, I can see that.
Next up, Commander Keen, Goodbye Galaxy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Both descents that were on DOS.
Yeah.
This is a little bit more of a fringe one. I'm not sure if there was a DOS version. Diablo?
Nope, there wasn't.
No, there was not.
We can scratch that one. Final Doom and Doom 2.
Yeah.
Gotta have those.
Yep.
And following that same line of thought, Heretic and Hexen.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Jazz Jackrabbit 1 and 2.
All right.
Jewel of the Jungle, we saw in the... In the test video that they sent out.
Yep.
It's not licensed yet, but I'm kind of taking for granted that everything that was shown will be licensable and that they're just waiting to make announcements. Might and Magic 3.
Ooh, that's a good pick.
Going way off the board here, One Must Fall 2097.
Oh, hell yeah.
SimCity 2000.
Yeah. Go with that.
Ultima 4.
Hmm.
Both parts of Ultima 7.
Yeah.
Warcraft 2 with the expansion. And Wolfenstein 3D with the expansion.
Yeah.
Those are my picks.
Those are, you know, pretty solid picks. I think a lot of those will probably end up there. For sure.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think it leads to a really eclectic mix of games and concentrates them in the genres that are strongest at the time.
So. Yeah, it's going to be fun to see how they actually handle this because some of the companies that produce these games no longer exist.
But if you're dealing with individuals, that might actually be easier than dealing with companies.
Yeah. So, yeah, and, you know, those rights, some of the rights, some of the trademarks have even expired.
Yep.
So it might actually end up being easier because they can just re-register them. So.
Yep. Yeah. And, no, I did not forget Command & Conquer, but I didn't think EA would be very amenable with the remasters coming.
Yeah, they're not going to do that because they're EA. And they're
yeah. So. Although I still think SimCity 2000 is very much in play.
Yeah, that probably... would be, because they kind of destroyed SimCity, so yeah, that's something needs to happen with that franchise that doesn't involve forced online connectivity for no apparent reason.
Yep.
Yeah.
So.
And what better place to start?
Yep, SimCity 2000 or 3000, but that was a Windows game, so.
Oh, speaking of which, I unearthed my copy of that, too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, 3000. Unpacking.
Yep, finally.
Yeah. So, yeah, the PC Classic, it's a thing that's going to happen. And
I still have it gone.
Oh yeah. What have you got?
Yeah. Okay, so the first is it's got to be Quake 1 and 2.
Ooh.
Okay. Well, Quake 1, I could see. Quake 2 wouldn't run on Windows.
With the expansions.
Yeah.
Because those games are basically the godfather of multiplayer shooters.
Yeah.
That's true.
I would also really like to see Wing Commander on there.
Yeah. EA would have to get on board with that, but since they're not doing anything with that franchise.
Command and Conquer.
Yep.
Yeah. Let's see. What else? I would expect to see something like The Seventh Guest or you know, Myst. Because, again, those types of games were a major part of the PC market back in the day.
Yeah.
Love it or hate it. with all their cheesy FMV sequences, but and as far as like adventure games go, because funny enough, we haven't really mentioned adventure games at all.
Yeah, and there were a lot of them.
Sam and Max Road would be a good one.
Mm-hmm. Toonstruck would be one I'd suggest. Yeah. That's the one with the what's his name from Back to the Future.
Christopher Lloyd, right?
Yep, him.
Yeah.
Let me see. There's that. There's I can never remember the title of the game, but it's the one where you play as a roach.
Oh, yeah. Don't remember that one either.
I don't remember that one, but it is genuinely good. Yeah. And as far as like RPGs are concerned, because you know, computer RPGs were a major part of PC gaming. I gotta say something like Baldur's Gate.
Yeah.
That was definitely Windows.
Yep. That's the problem. It seems like they're trying to limit themselves to DOS.
Yeah.
Which yeah.
is weird, but...
Mm. I can think of a few reasons why, but it does definitely limit your selections a bit. One question that I would like to present here. Duke Nukem 1 and 2.
Yeah.
The platformers? Yeah.
Yeah.
A legitimately good platforming there.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be a good way to sort of show, you know, where Duke originally came from.
Yep.
Yeah.
And would go really well alongside Commander Keen and Jazz Jackrabbit.
Yeah. Yeah.
And actually, since we're going in with 3D Realms, why don't we go ahead and put in Shadow Warrior as well?
Yeah, why the hell not? Yeah.
Although that game is definitely not PC. I don't mean PC as in personal computer. I mean PC as in politically correct.
Yeah,
that
game
is racist as shit.
Yeah, well,
I mean that game was considered.
Wang.
Yeah, I mean that game was considered racist as shit, even by mid-90s standards.
Yeah, well, which is why they toned it down for the remakes. So
slightly,
slight. But, yeah.
They just made him goofier.
Yeah, yeah. I would probably add, Lands of Lore 1 and 2 to get into the PC RPGs.
See, it's pure ignorance that keep me from putting that one on the list because that's just outside of any of my experience.
Yeah, yeah, those were the first person type, point and click RPGs.
Dungeon crawlers. Yeah.
Oh great. Shit.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Shit.
Which then I brings up, what about Ultima?
I had 4 and 7 on there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And what were you saying?
System Shock.
Oh, System Shock, yeah.
System Shock, yeah, could definitely work.
Yeah.
The original or System Shock 2?
Yeah.
Yes.
No, yes, System Shock both. 2
is,
okay.
Yeah, it's great.
So.
Yeah, there were a lot of good games.
Rise of the Triad.
Yeah.
That is a game that doesn't get enough.
I wholeheartedly agree.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was one of the games that... Wasn't that originally one of the titles that came out of Ion Storm?
That was pre-Ion
Storm.
Ion Storm
was not a thing yet.
No, it was it was Apogee, but it was Tom Hall. That was when he went over there after leaving id.
Bring up Ion Storm. This also means that we can bring some of the one or two Ion Storm titles that were actually good.
Mm.
Oh, wouldn't those have been Windows as well?
Yeah.
Those yeah, they would. Damn.
Damn it. Which is a problem. Yeah. There's a good bit of stuff there. I noticed there's not a whole... I mean, I mentioned one racing game, because... Yeah. But back then, you didn't see too many of them. Well, there was Wacky Racers, which was kind of their weird take on Mario Kart. Apogee's take on Mario Kart. So, which wasn't bad.
No.
Yeah. So... Anyways,
well, if you can get EA on board for it, how about the original Need for Speed?
Yeah.
All right.
Sure.
All right. Okay.
So PC Classic.
That was Ultra Shock for people.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So Final Fantasy 14 news. You're going to want to go through this, Pat.
Yeah, we got a new expansion coming.
Yep. Shadowbringers, early summer. Level cap is going up to 80 as predicted. Blue Mage has been announced, but it will not be a fully featured job. It's going to be sort of solo content that you can take into multiplayer content on a limited basis. It's kind of weird how they're going to be implementing it. It's not part of Shadowbringers, and that will be introduced in the 4.5 patch that comes before that.
Mm-hmm.
But you're basically going to be able to take a Blue Mage up to level 50 and gather up this huge laundry list of abilities. You can pick 24 of those abilities, and that's your build.
Mm.
And then if you go into a multiplayer instance, you have to be a part of a party that has assembled ahead of time, so you're playing with friends or people you know, rather than you cannot enter the duty finder with Blue Mage.
Mm.
It's just not going to be permitted. And then I figure it'll be ratcheted up to level 80 by the time Shadowbringers actually gets here. The funny thing about this was that during the stage presentation, Yosuke Matsuda was actually on hand, and he came out on stage wearing full blue mage attire. So Yoshida has corrupted him. And it was hilarious. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, on the subject of new races, Yoshida himself did his usual hinting by coming out on stage wearing a Bugs Bunny shirt.
Okay. Well, we know who that is.
Yep. And he also hinted that we might be running into a certain such character in expanded Evil East content, so...
Could it be Fran?
Probably.
I'll be okay with that.
And he also said that this might be the final new race added to Final Fantasy XIV. So, unless anyone has any ideas they want to pitch to him now.
Well, we could always bring it back to Final Fantasy IX world.
You got a few options there, I suppose.
Yeah, you got the Burmeseans, you know.
So,
I mean, if we are going all in on the idea of the Final Fantasy multiverse.
Yep. Mm. And, you know, the story arc that Shadowbringers, and this is, I should talk about this from less than a news standpoint and more of a discussion standpoint, because toward the end of Heaven's Ward, there was a story arc called As Goes Light, So Goes Darkness.
Uh-huh.
And what happens is you come across another team of warriors that are in some cases even beating you to the punch to killing primals, and their leader, Arbert, sort of becomes a rival to you.
Mm-hmm.
And throughout the course of this, one of your own NPC party members is sort of doing a lot of research into the lore and even doing some work with Arbert and his party. And what you learn is that there's what they call the 10 and 3 worlds, which is the Final Fantasy multiverse. And you find out that a world being overrun with either light or darkness is a bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
And you find out that what happened to Arbert's world was that he was one of the warriors of light there, and his group... vanquished the darkness so thoroughly that the light overwhelmed the world, and I'm trying to remember his choice of words. Froze everything in pristine eternity, or something like that. Mm-hmm. And he was traveling the multiverse as a dark warrior to try and prevent that from spreading to other realms.
Mm-hmm.
Arbert was the original Warrior of Light.
Hmm.
The world that got pretty much washed away was the world of Final Fantasy I.
Ah.
And so, and you also find out that one of the 10 and 3 worlds was so enshrouded in darkness that it became what Final Fantasy XIV, what Eorzea residents know as the Void.
Hmm. Mm-hmm.
Which I'm thinking is either the world of 2 or the world of 6.
Hmm.
Thanks, Kafka.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So,
well, he would be the one to basically wreck everything, wouldn't he?
Well, when the World of Ruin happened, I mean, they got rid of Kafka, but they didn't really solve the problem at hand, if you think about it.
Yeah.
So that's my guess on that. But the story here with Shadowbringers is going to go back to that story arc. We've already seen that Arbert is going to be returning. We saw in the trailer. And the entire premise of the limited trailer that we saw at the fan festival implies that the world of 14 is about to suffer the same fate. And you have to become a warrior of darkness in order to prevent that from happening. I think the reason that... Yoshida has been so silent about new locales coming up in the expansion just yet is because I think the new regions that are going to be introduced are going to be from the multiverse.
Hmm.
And we're going to start seeing what has come of some of these other Final Fantasy worlds in the years since they took place.
Yeah.
And
it's also possible that a lot of existing areas are going to get changes as well.
Yep.
So
again.
because there was the implication of a time skip in the trailer as well. And I'm just looking forward to the European or Japanese fan festival where we're going to see the complete like 5 or 6 minute trailer. I like that really good Stormblood one that you guys saw leading up to that release.
Yeah.
So that's my personal take on Shadowbringers so far. Mm-hmm. They also hinted at a gunblade wielding job, which is, I'm starting to wonder if that is Final Fantasy XIV's version of Corsair.
It's possible.
It would fit because the character utilizing that job was Thancred.
Mm-hmm.
So he's sort of been the thief ninja of the group up to this point.
Yeah.
But I'm really interested in seeing where they go with the storyline because I felt that As Goes Light, So Goes Darkness was too short. I felt they had a lot more that they could have addressed with that before going into Stormblood. But I'm ready for this one. I just I want to see where they're going with it, because if they're actually going to be attacking the concept of the multiverse, which has kind of lingered in the background of a lot of Final Fantasy products over the years. If we're going to finally see something that approaches it from a complete standpoint, Shadowbringers could really be something special.
Hmm. Yeah. So there's that. We have to talk about that question, though.
God damn it. So there was a 1 hour FanFest Q&A. Yoshida was fielding questions, and if you want to see a good representation of all of the questions that were asked, it was a pretty good Q&A, all told. But then Rock Paper Shotgun sent the wrong reporter to cover the fan festival and tried to stir the pot by bringing up the topic of roleplay brothels that you find on future Balmung server.
Yeah.
And he just would not let it go. And this was strictly time limited to 1 hour, so this guy was disrespecting everyone's time.
Hmm.
And Yoshida himself tried to just nip it in the bud and say, yeah, we know about it. It's against the terms of use. And if people want to violate the terms of use, then they'll be dealt with. And the guy kept pushing on, but these are consensual actions. And Yoshida just tried to brush him off at that point and get on to the next question. Yeah. Because it's
For those who don't know what we're talking about, basically this is the MMO version of phone sex, basically, that we're talking about.
Balmung server in particular has a reputation for it, which is kind of funny because of the server realignment that they're going to be going through. They're introducing a new data center to North America, and people on, I think, Ether are just overjoyed that Balmung is being sent away.
Yeah.
So that's it's been amusing to watch that, but yeah, it's a thing that's been happening, and it was not news to anybody in the room. And this guy goes on to write just a almost derogatory piece about the entire festival.
Yeah.
I don't think this should be an indictment of Rock Paper Shotgun as much as
it's an indictment of this one asshole.
His career needs a timeout.
Yeah.
It's just not a responsible way to cover a celebration of a very popular game.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want a good breakdown of the Q&A as a whole, Mr. Happy has a really good one on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
And he was there for it. He asked a question there, but he also had a lot to say about about that question. I don't think he knew who at the time who it was, but yeah, he definitely took a moment out of his video to address that. So
yeah, I mean, this is one of those things where there's a certain arrogance to some game journalists who tend to think they're better than other people just because they spent way too much money on journalism school.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, this isn't just a problem in games journalism. This is a problem in journalism as a whole.
Yes.
There is definitely, I'm starting to see kind of a pushback towards that kind of attitude. So, I mean, yeah, we're starting to see this kind of thing, kind of being frowned upon. And as you'll notice, if you try to go to that article, about that question, like the original, piece on Rock Paper Shotgun, I think they pulled it.
Good.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
But anyways, so a lot of good stuff for Final Fantasy 14.
Yeah, yeah. I got to get back on that and really just prep my character for Shadowbringers, because I think I'm still doing 4.3 content right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe
ironically, it seems to be that the side Final Fantasy content seems to be more profitable than the main Final Fantasy content.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, 15
was because it's handling it right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's also fair to point out that Shadowbringers is also going to have an engine overhaul. So, yeah, I expect that game to probably run a lot better on the PS4 now.
Yeah, they're going to alleviate themselves of 32-bit platforms.
Yeah.
So, which Yoshida was able to provide the very specific number that counts for 1.8% of the player base. So,
yeah, that's not a lot. So they'll need to upgrade their systems to
the very least 64-bit
operating systems or get a PS4.
And just this change alone will free up, I think, 4 times the amount of RAM.
Yeah. So good stuff. And our final story of the day, Square Enix has snapped up the Parasite Eve trademark again.
Yay!
Let's see to making moves.
Yep. So, do we kind of need to explain what all of this was? Okay, so I will. Parasite Eve was originally a novel by a gentleman named Hideaki Sena, who was a pharmacologist. And it came out in the mid-90s. It was a major seller. It was like an event book. It was that big of a seller. It inspired a film. I think there was a TV series at one point. But over here in the U.S., it's probably most famous because it inspired a couple of video games from Square Enix that are essentially sequels to the original novel. The first one, of course, was the original Parasite Eve. It came out around, what was it, like 1996, 1997?
97 or 98.
I was going to say it had to be 98 because it wasn't before Final Fantasy VII.
I remember because when the game originally came out, like, the stickers. It had not just had the demo, but it also had, like, the stickers.
Holiday 97 at the absolute earliest.
Yeah. And it had a sticker on the front that said, "From the creators of Final Fantasy VII." So, but basically, it was a horror RPG. Where the titular Eve was the final character that you fought against. It kind of got overshrouded by a lot of the RPGs that we suddenly got a glut of back then, because after Final Fantasy VII basically became a license to print money, we just got soaked with them, basically. Mm-hmm. then there was the sequel, Parasite Eve 2, which kind of redid the combat system a little bit and was still good, but wasn't quite as well received as the last one. And I don't think we heard from that license again until the third birthday, several years later. But it's legit awesome. For the record, Hideaki Sena, the original writer, actually really liked the first game. game. He thought it was the perfect sequel to his original work. So, you know, take that for what it's worth. But if you're curious, there is an English translated version of the original novel from Vertical Publishing. But yeah, I haven't linked to it on Amazon, but just be aware this was originally published in 2008 and they haven't reprinted it. So,
yeah, you'll probably be buying a used copy if you're.
Yeah, and it's probably going to be a little on the pricey side, but.
Oh, yeah. So, possible revival of Parasite Eve.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Yeah.
I mean, it was legit. I mean, the first game was legitimately a hit when it came out.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it was mostly because of the Final Fantasy VII.
Yeah, tie-in.
And it had I didn't have the demo for. What game was it that had the Final Fantasy VIII demo in it? I think it was.
Musashi. Global had Final Fantasy VII.
It was Musashi.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the game that had it. Okay.
Yeah.
There's another franchise they desperately need to bring back.
Yeah. That and
Musashi. God, I remember that first. The original Brave Fencer Musashi. God, that game was so much fun.
So I got a little bit of breaking news here.
Oh boy, what do we got?
In Japan, apparently tonight or last night, there was a Legend of Zelda concert. And at some point, Aonuma took the stage and said, "I know what you're waiting for, Skyward Sword for Switch, right?"
People were waiting for that, apparently.
So it got a good reaction and... Yeah, apparently, okay. Breaking news, Skyward Sword for Switch.
Yeah, I was just reading about that. Said there was no video because, you know, you can't take video at a concert.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. We'll wait for...
Anuma was... if this was the Final Fantasy concert, I think it is, Anuma may have been part of the band that was playing, so...
Oh, no, it was a Zelda concert.
Okay.
We'll wait for more outlets to report on it, but this is what I'm seeing on my screen right now, so take it for what it's worth, but I felt I would be remiss not to bring it up.
Yeah, well, Skyward Sword without the Motion Plus control
would be a very good game.
Yeah, so I'd be okay with that.
Yeah, it's what I wish Skyward Sword had been from the beginning.
Yeah, so. All right, so let's wrap up with our picks of the week. Looks like there's only a couple of us, so whatever.
Yeah, I had nothing. I've just been too busy doing stuff.
Yeah. So my pick is privacy. You guys like privacy?
Yeah.
Keeping your shit to yourself.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So this is a service I just stumbled across and started using. You guys will probably want to check this out because it is just amazing. So what this is a payment processor. It's kind of like a PayPal, but not really.
Mm-hmm.
You hook up your debit card, your bank account, whatever, to it. And then what it lets you do is generate credit card numbers for for your transactions. And the cool thing about this is the credit card numbers that you generate will lock to that one merchant. Can you see the advantage of this?
Mm-hmm.
So, it's free to use. I should also point out that when you use it and a merchant asks you for billing information, you can put in whatever the fuck you want. Privacy doesn't care.
Wow.
So, there's that. I mean, there's limited, if you're buying stuff online or you're paying for subscriptions, you can use this to segregate all your stuff into basically just little buckets, so you know exactly what's being taken for what. You can set limits. You can get notifications on when something is charged. It's a really, really complete and comprehensive solution. It's also free, and using it will actually give you cash back. So,
wow,
there's no real reason not to use this. Also, yeah, because the numbers are locked to the particular merchant that you first use them on, if that particular merchant does get breached and that card is attempted to be used elsewhere, one, the transaction doesn't go through, and two, you know that they were breached before they did.
Mm.
So, yeah, it's a good service. I'd recommend checking it out. And yeah, if you want to buy stuff on PSN, then you want to make sure that they're the only ones who could ever use that card. Then yeah, this is a great way to go. So that's why I pick privacy.com.
Oh yeah, I like it.
Yeah. And you, Brandon, you got
something? Yeah. Yes, I do. It's a game. It's not quite out yet. It's going to come out next year. It is a fully traditionally animated sci-fi RPG called Grifflands. And when I say traditionally animated, I mean like hand-drawn, cell animated. Yeah. Where basically you play a mercenary who then takes on a party of other mercenaries where you go out and you buy and sell and trade your various mercenary services. You get to explore this post-apocalyptic planet. It's turn-based combat where, you know, you're all fighting against a party. And basically everything from, like, you can basically, like, negotiate prices and all of that. And even have, like, some moral choices and stuff. And I took one look at this game's trailer and I was like, well, crap, I need this in my life now. So Grifflands, go check it out.
Yeah, yes, I'm looking at this right now. It's like, please take my money.
Yeah. Did you like the animation from Banner Saga? Because it's very, very similar to that.
Awesome. That's a good find. Yeah, so thanks for that. All right, so I think we're done for today. Question?
Yes, we are.
All right, so yeah, you can subscribe to the show on iTunes, Google Play, or your favorite podcast aggregator. You can also check us out at smashpad.com, where we have written stuff and Game of the Year coverage. Yeah, that's a thing that's about to happen.
Yes, yep. It is.
Yeah.
God damn it.
So,
been a hell of a year, though. Yeah. I'm looking forward to this.
Yeah, it really has. Yeah. Stay tuned for that. So, for Brandon Perkins, Patrick Mifflin, and Dan Rimpictorio, I am Filippo D'Adolfo, and we will see you next week.